Hi, everybody. It's Mary Lou Tyler. This week's guest is Matt Amundson. I knew I was going to try. I was going to mess that up, but Amundson, just like Anderson, he's the VP of marketing for a company called Everstring. And the reason why I've asked Matt to come on the show today was because I was very intrigued by what they're doing over there, over at Everstring, in terms of the list. Now, you guys all know I harp on the list. I don't like the fact that we're still blitzing and still mass mailing people, emailing, in the hopes of finding the cherries, the low-hanging fruit. We have to change this. I mean, I'm going to let Matt take the stage away and talk all about it. But really what's happening here, folks, is that we are trying to reach the era of quality and stop worrying about quantity of things because it's not helping us. Our response rates are going down. Our delivery rates are going down. We're getting a lot of people who are savvy to these mass mailers. So really it's about us thinking, who are these people who we can do business with, who want to do business with us, and what can we find out about them so that initial conversation is more meaningful and resonates with them? Matt, I would like you to take it away from here and tell us about what you guys are doing there and how this is impacting our industry for the better. It's not replacing the development people, sales development folks. It's augmenting them and making us appear smarter, more concerned, and better salespeople because we can focus on the conversation finally.
Well, thank you for that awesome introduction, Mary Lou. It is an absolute pleasure and a privilege to be on your show. I was a huge fan and like literal disciple of your book that you put out with Aaron Ross on Predictable Revenue. I've read Predictable Prospecting and love it. So this is an absolute treat for me today. So
how wonderful.
Just kind of nutshell here on Everstring. So Everstring, we consider ourselves a modern data platform. And, you know, the term modern gets thrown out a lot, and I'll sort of unpack what that means to the team here. So modern in the way that we collect and curate data, and modern in the types of data that we deliver. So when I say modern in the way that we collect and curate data, a lot of sort of legacy data providers use very traditional means of collecting data. They use call centers, whether domestic or offshore, to essentially call on businesses and try to figure out the firmographic or technographic data on those companies, and they bring it into their database. The unfortunate thing about that is when they don't connect with that company, that data just stays stagnant. It doesn't get updated. And so what a lot of people see from the lists from these legacy data providers is just really, really outdated data. Mm-hmm. The way Everstring approaches it is we blend human beings with machine learning. So we're actually able to have some human interaction with companies to collect data, but then also we use a machine to say, okay, this person collected data in this way. I can go do this out at scale. Then we feed that data back through a person for verification. So what we get is really, really up-to-date data that's then curated by a human being, which is a much smarter and more scalable and a way of collecting data. And it's allowed us to catch up with a lot of the legacy data vendors in terms of the coverage of data that we're able to provide our customers. And then when I say modern from the perspective of new types of data, because we imbue data science and machine learning into the data, we're able to figure out connections that exist between businesses. And what that enables an SDR or a salesperson to do is to see things like, oh, this prospect or this account looks a lot like these three customers that we have, or this company looks a lot like these companies that are growing, so it has a high propensity to buy, or perhaps it has a high propensity to need a round of funding. Or, you know, for some of our financial services customers, this company may be a high risk for credit or low risk for credit. So we're able to not just look at data in the form of, you know, fields inside of a Salesforce record, but how do we pull that all together and use machines to help us extract the insights that we probably normally could get as a person, but on a massive scale?
So to what extent does the company who engages with your company have to have their data act together? Or could we have like the typical dirty database that made an effort to try to put the fields together and not have duplicates, but, you know, it's not the way we want. Is it okay if our data is not pristine to run through an engine like yours to come out with quality, or do we need to come in with quality as well?
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked that question. And that's something that comes up a lot. So it really doesn't matter how clean or dirty your database is. All we really need to have an understanding of is, are the accounts that exist in your database, are they at an opportunity level? Are they at a deal level? Are they at a customer level, et cetera? We don't ingest any of the firmographic data or whether you have multiples of an account or of a contact into our database. We're bringing our own fresh, clean data to you. So it's less of a pull and more of a push. The only thing that we're pulling out is which ones are customers and which ones are still just prospects to you.
Okay, so we need to know relative position in the pipeline, which may be difficult for some people to even give you that, but
it can be.
Yeah, we could do the best we can at all. Is it all the pipeline? Because, you know, at top of funnel, especially in a Salesforce instance, we don't necessarily have the stages defined. We have to sort of kludgy fit it to get that cold working qualifying stage. But definitely from opportunity down, there's been a lot of emphasis about keeping track of where things are relative position, how long they've been there. So do you also take in that time parameter to help understand the slow, medium, and long time sales conversion rates and things, or do you get some gist of a days in stage is what I'm asking you? Is there some level of us being able to provide that, or do you glean that out so that we know our tiers of accounts and how long things take to actually close?
Yeah, great question. So some of our most advanced customers are using EverString to build models around fastest wins. Mm-hmm. So if they're feeling confident about their data, about when an opportunity was created up until when an opportunity was closed won, then we can certainly ingest that data and build models that looks somewhat like that. And when I say model, what I mean by that is, you know, if you had, say, 10, 15, 20, 100 accounts where you had an understanding that, hey, this is quality, I want to see more just like this, we can take that, understand all the components that make that account a good fit, and go look for similarities.
Oh, interesting. Because a lot of times we have to fake it till we make it and just start with what we think is a good baseline and then go out from, I guess, bottom up would be the best way to describe it. And then dispute it or rejoice in it, one or the other, because we think we're on the right track. But then when we start actually doing these campaigns and these touches and seeing how long things take with mindfulness now instead of willy-nilly, we still may be off with that. But at least it gives us a good starting point of, do we have tiers, first of all, of accounts? Do they close with different conversion rates? Can we have a nice and ebb and flow type of forecast that's not peaks and valleys, because we've fed it with enough of these different accounts that have these different cycles and yields so that our forecast looks really good. Have you seen that as with the way that your company works, by feeding us better data to have better conversations, that our forecasts are now looking a lot better and a lot more impactful and actually meaningful?
Well, there's two things that I would say to that. So EverString is not necessarily a platform that you would use to say, hey, what's the quality of this opportunity? How likely is it to close? Mm-hmm. But there are two things that I've found over the course of my career that are the primary blockers for why meetings don't turn into opportunities. Ooh. And a lot of it has to do with the relationship that exists between, you know, sales development and sales, or marketing and sales, or sort of however you want to carve up those three groups.
Right.
One is that the company is not a good fit, right? And I always give the broadest possible explanation for why a company is not a good fit. Say you are, you know, Marketo in 2012. Mm-hmm. And in those days, Marketo could only sell to companies that were running Salesforce as their CRM. Okay. And if your SDR brings an AE, a lead from an account that's running, say, Microsoft Dynamics or Sugar CRM, as their CRM, that's going to be not a fit, right?
Right.
The second thing that causes a meeting not to turn into an opportunity is the element of timing. Excuse me. So it might be the right business, but the timing may be off. And there's two ways that we save those two issues off. One, we create models to give you a concept of fit. How much does this look like one of your existing customers?
Mm.
And that includes hard filters like has to have Salesforce CRM or maybe has to be using Google Analytics, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe has to be of a certain size or number of employees. And then the second thing is we imbue intent saying that, hey, this company is actually doing active research for this specific product or service. And so as an SDR, when you're able to bring an AE, an account that looks exactly like 10, 12, 15 of your customers and is actually looking for a solution or service like what you sell right now, mm-hmm. the conversion rate from meeting to opportunity just shoots through the roof. So
right.
while we may not necessarily be impacting speed in opportunity to close through some sort of AI that's telling you, hey, this is good, or you should be doing these other things, the
right.
quality of the opportunities that are coming into the latter stage of your funnel should be significantly higher because you're only dealing with accounts that are a great fit for your business and are actively looking for a solution like yours.
Right. And I would think psychologically that also has an impact on how we engage in our conversation. Because if we know, right or wrong, if we know or think we know that they want to talk to us, it's that whole thing like inbound versus outbound, right? When people are coming into us, coming into our net, we have this sense of, well, they want to talk to me. Whereas when you're going outreach cold, it's you feel like you're bothering them. So I would imagine this really helps not only with the velocity, but helps with the way we actually engage in that conversation because we feel better about it because we think we know that they're looking, they're actively researching, the timing is right. And, you know, the handoff, like you were talking about before, still remains a monumental problem out there in the world. But, you know, I know you guys can help us with that. But getting the information in the hands of the reps in a timely fashion is really where this all just opens up for a higher converting sales pipeline, I would imagine.
Absolutely. It becomes, and I'm glad you touched on the psychological part of it, because for a sales rep, when they hear that, hey, this is a great fit business and they're actually looking for a solution, it starts mm-hmm. to become a little bit of a race between them and their competitor, right? So, hey, if I don't extract the dollars from this prospect, somebody else will.
Somebody
and,
will.
And that really changes the way they feel about the meetings and about the opportunities. And it applies a little bit of pressure on them. So, mm-hmm. you know, they want to convert those because they see an opportunity to make money. But they're also like, oh, okay, well, I'm in for it, right? Because there's probably two or three other vendors that are going to be involved in this cycle.
Right. But like you said, you know, in predictable revenue, we talked a lot about the mapping call, which is navigating through the organization in the hopes to start yeah. assembling the right people. That's a very time consuming, while it's fun, it's time consuming task. But what you're doing is you're advancing that sales conversation to the point where the points of differentiation have to be really honed yeah. by the teams.
Yeah.
The ability to have a persuasive sales argument really starts to show. So what this is doing, what I think it's great about this whole AI deep learning, it's forcing us to be better in the sales conversation, focusing
totally.
On our sales skills instead of running around admin trying to figure out, well, where are these people? you know where they are. You've got them. They're interested. And now it's up to you, Mr. and Mrs. Salesperson, in order to be able to
yeah.
convince them that you're the right fit and to do what my colleague Keenan just wrote a book called Gap Selling, really finding mm-hmm. that gap of what they have today, what they can experience, and why you're different from the competition. And if we can focus more on that, we're going to get better at it, you know, just by nature of the fact that we're having more conversations.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah,
awesome.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think you're hitting the nail on the head. And this is the one thing that, you know, as a marketer, I'm very much a proponent of is how do we up-level the sales game, right?
Yeah.
How do we get away from just, oh, hey, you're a marketer and you need this, and more into, hey, I have an understanding of what's going on in your business. I understand the challenges that you're going through, and then tailoring their offering towards that. You know,
right.
If you're a salesperson, you're going to sell to me that way, I'm so much more likely to buy from you.
Exactly. You are what we're trying to get to, which is that consummate professional who is there as a guide to help them weave through all this crazy information to get to the end of where they want to go. Like, where do you want to go? Where do you see yourself? And they now need to prove that we're the ones that can take you along that success path from where you are today to where you can ultimately be. So I love that. The other thing I'm hearing too, Matt, is perhaps not only sales skills, but mindset and habit and repetition and discipline, all the things that make it difficult for us because we multitask so much. This focuses us in on that human interaction, building the empathy, more of a human to human interface results with the help of technology. Do you agree with that? Do you think technology is more of an aid rather than a replacement in this case?
I absolutely do. You know, there's a philosophy that, that we've really locked into here at Everstring. Mm-hmm. And one shared by one of my personal mentors, Kyle Porter, the CEO over at SalesLoft.
Oh, yeah.
And that is, you know, this is meant to be an Iron Man suit and not a Terminator. And what that means is, this is meant to take a salesperson and make them better, right. Enhance the things that they're great at, as opposed to replacing them with, you know, a sentient AI being, right? This is, hey, you are an amazing salesperson, and I want to take that to the next level.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. So, you know, getting to this next step, I'm sure people are sitting here, probably driving home right now, but I'm sure they're thinking, you know, how does one get started? Is it as simple as, I think it's simple, but is it as simple as going through your historical information, kind of mapping through who are my client types and giving enough information so that we can model? Or is it like, here's what I got, go figure it out, since there's a lot of data in the data set that you could probably piece together? How do you usually set this up? Is it part human telling you the story as well as the data? Or can you do this figuring out the initial kind of architecture from the data itself?
Yeah, good question. Yeah, it's really both. Because, you know, the thing is, there's always some sort of, you know, tribal knowledge or inherent bias that exists within, you know, a business around the types of businesses that they want to sell to.
Yeah.
So, sure, we could probably just extract the data. We could probably then separate that into, you know, all their various ICPs, build an entire total addressable market for them. But there's always these hard filters that are sort of hard to glean just from raw data itself. And a lot of that has to do with what we talked about earlier in the call, which is, you know, internal data cleanliness isn't always there, or the factors that make something good versus bad can't be captured inside CRM. I'll give you a real world example.
Perfect.
When I was leading the SDR team at Marketo about 7 years ago, we realized this one super consistent pattern with all of the meetings that we booked. And it was, does this company have a one or a two color logo? And it sounds ridiculous.
Wow.
But if a company had a two color logo, they were like, I can't remember the exact statistics, but they were like 100 times more likely to buy from us than a company that had a one color logo.
Oh, wow.
And it makes sense because, you know, at the time we were sort of disrupting the world of just like batch and blast email service providers. Mm-hmm. And we were selling to much more sophisticated marketers than people who are just like, hey, you know what? I'm going to load a list in and I'm going to send an email to my entire database.
Sure.
Companies like that tended to spend a little bit more money on brand. And those brands had always, when you worked with a branding agency, they would bring you back a two-color logo as opposed to just the one. Now, that could have been like tints and shades, right? So it could have been like black, whites, and grays. But it was true over and over again. And I don't know if it just became a self-fulfilling prophecy where SDRs in our business just were like, oh, one color logo, I'm not passing that to a sales rep. But it was shocking how true it was. And so these are the types of things that are the tribal knowledge or the anecdotal evidence that creates the sales bias. And those are the things that we need to know about however crazy they might seem, because shockingly enough, when I talk to our data scientists here, they're like, oh, well, we could pull if a company has two colors in their logo or not. So I'm always like surprised by what our capabilities are.
Right.
But those are the things where it's not just, hey, let's look at a group of customers and, you know, we'll find all the patterns that exist and recommend, hey, if you like these 10, here's the next 100 to go after. There has to be some sort of like hard filters that go into place that I talked about earlier.
Yeah, you know, this brings me back to the days when we used to do direct mail, where we looked at heuristic, we looked at psychographic information, demographic, you name it. We overlaid as much as possible with the idea of segmentation, getting down to that data set that was the smallest data set with the highest quality was the goal, because it cost money to mail. So we couldn't really, mass mail, although a lot of people did. We did as much as we could to try to fine tune that. The other thing I like about this is bias in itself is a kind of interesting parameter and metric, because it could also dispel what the C-suite thinks is the right account. If we go into the database and the heuristics and the characteristics of this particular best case scenario for closed one, looks slightly different than what the C-suite had in mind. It's an interesting topic to discuss. You know, what made you think that? I mean, you and I have probably sat in so many meetings where the goals for the next year are net new logos with no understanding of what it took to get the logos we had, what sources caused those logos to close, and like you said, which are the different conversion rates. It was just some number arbitrarily pulled out of a hat. We need 15 new logos per rep this year. You know, it's like, so I like the fact that the data can utilize bias, but it could also challenge it so that you have good conversations going in before you make your final, okay, this is what we want to start with. This is the data set that we want to pick. Here's where we're going to go with it. We're going to run these campaigns against it to validate whether that was a good selection. And if not, we have the ability to pivot then, because it's so enriched with a lot of different data points. I like that.
Well, and the other thing too is, I think, you know, helpful advice to any marketer that's thinking about bringing in anything, whether it's a new data source or whether it's a new piece of their MarTech stack. If that purchase is going to interact with the sales team in any way, shape, or form, they need to at least play some part in the purchase or the enablement process, because. Right. I think as marketers, just because the MarTech stacks have become so big, we're constantly bringing something in and adding it, and then it just kind of shows up in front of a salesperson, whether it's in the form of an email or an alert or an object that lives inside of Salesforce. And, you know, for them to feel comfortable with it and to feel like they are a part of that process, they have to be engaged. Right. If you just show up one day and say, here's a number and this number is on a scale of 1 to 100, and it says this company is an 80 and this company is a 60, they're going to be like, well, I think this 60 is an 80 and I think this 80 is a 30. They need to be involved.
Right.
If they feel comfortable with those numbers that are coming through, then they're going to engage with it so much more, and the process starts to flow a lot better. And again, getting into the psychology of it, right? If you feel like you have some ownership of it, you want it to work. If you feel like it's just some new thing that's been pushed into your CRM and you now have to quote unquote deal with it, then you kind of mentally start to self-sabotage a little bit and say, yeah, you said this was good. Well, it turns out it's terrible.
Right.
And if that starts to spread in the sales team, then no one's going to want to use it.
Hence the compliance issues we're already experiencing with a lot of the technology stack that's being put into the CRM or bolted onto the CRM, is that there hasn't been buy-in from the people who are going to use it. That's the age-old software as a service and just software in general usage. If the users are not involved in either the design process, the implementation process, or how they're going to set it up to execute it, chances are you're going to be fighting a battle when this thing deploys, which is not what it was intended to do, but that's what happens. So Matt, how do we get a hold of you going forward if we want to explore this? What is this called now? Is this data science? Is there a term for what you guys are doing? Have you invented a new term yet for this?
Well, you know, the thing about our space is we were sort of born out of this idea of predictive analytics or predictive marketing. And we realized that, you know, a lot of what you were talking about at the beginning of the call, hey, if we're just ingesting people's data and trying to build models off it, well, people have massive data hygiene issues. And so the models that you build aren't very good. And so we had to, about 3 years ago, we had to pivot into being really a data platform first that applied data science. And the category that we're leaning into as a business is a modern data platform. So, you know, getting out of the age old stuff that we talked about at the opening of this podcast and into something that, you know, not just data, but also insights, not just present state, but gives you the potential future state of a business. So modern data platform is what we're called. And if you want to learn more about it, you can swing by everstring.com. I'm also a person who loves chatting with peers or people who are at making their first transition into management or are interested in this type of stuff. So you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at MattyA56. You can email me directly at Everstring. I'm Matt@everstring.com. I'm probably in ZoomInfo, DiscoverOrg, and every other database. So my email is there, and that's what it is. Right. Or feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn. I love interacting with people and answering any questions that they have. And I'm not a salesperson, so we can just have a grown-up conversation whenever you'd like.
Yeah, this is really the way of the future, I think. I'm really excited about the blend of the science, but also the human side, and also how we search on the internet, how we utilize data, download data on the internet. And I think the combination of all of that allows us to reach that ultimate goal that we've been trying to reach, which is to be in a situation where we're actually in sales conversations a lot more of the day than we are doing administrative work or looking for stuff or researching stuff. You know, this allows us to really fine tune our craft, which is what we are hired for, which is to create outcomes more predictably so that our revenues spike. So I'm all for it. Absolutely. I think it's the greatest thing ever. Matt, thank you so much for being a guest on the show today. And I'll make sure that all these links to get a hold of you are in your little page on the website so that people can reach out. And really love what you're doing and wish you a very happy holiday as well. We're at the end of the year, 2018, doing this broadcast.
And you as well. It was a real pleasure to be on. And this is like a milestone for me. So I'm just giddy.
Well, thank you very much.